On the line, we welcome Scott Metzger, an accomplished guitarist from the improvisation-based instrumental trio LAMP. Scott is joined by drummer Russ Lawton and keyboardist Ray Paczkowski in this trio, and we're so excited to have them in Denver for a show at Cervantes on December 14th. Now, Scott is a busy working musician. Alongside LAMP, he is also a longstanding member of Grateful Dead revivalist Joe Russo's Almost Dead, and has also collaborated with John Medeski, Nels Klein, and Anders Osborne, just to name a few. Scott, welcome to the show. Welcome to Influenced.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Now, I was super floored to see that LAMP got its start one cold December night in 2018 at Nectar's, which is pretty much the jam band mecca in Burlington, Vermont. I'm actually a North Country girl myself. I was born and mostly raised in Plattsburgh, New York, right on Lake Champlain. So that was a pretty cool tie.
Yeah, not too far from where you're from.
What brought you up there?
It's definitely mecca. Well, Russ, Ray, and I had been talking about getting together for a few years. We would pass each other at festivals. And we all had a mutual respect for the way we played and whatnot. And at the time, we started sharing a booking agent who was the guy who actually nailed it down for us and booked us a date and said, this has to happen. You guys will love all playing together. So I got in the car and drove up to Burlington. We basically had no game plan. We got there to the club in the afternoon and sort of did a loose rehearsal and sound check for a couple of hours and kind of threw some material together and went up on stage and sort of hoped for the best. And at the end of the first set, it was very clear to the three of us that we had a thing worth doing more of. I don't know if any of us thought that we'd be doing it as much as we are, but it's all working out just great. I wouldn't change a thing.
So it was music at first sight then.
Now you could say that. You should put that on a t-shirt.
No, you're welcome to use it. Well, you know, there's expressions that make people cringe, noodling and jam bands. But it's, you know, I see the improvisatory about it because, you know, coming from a jazz vibe. But when you did that first rehearsal, you were just like, did you say, let's do a Stevie Nicks tune or let's do whatever? I mean, did you just start playing? And with songwriting, is there a process that you sit down and write a song or come in with a song or just it forms out of jamming? How does that become a thing for you?
Right. Well, the songwriting thing, we wrote after we did that first gig, we decided that we wanted to have some original material. So we, Russ and Ray are both based in Burlington, Vermont, and I am based in Brooklyn, New York. So the three of us are not together. So we started sending tracks around. You know, Russ would send a drum beat down to me and I would put a melody on it and I would send that to Ray and he would put a chord progression behind the melody or, you know, any variation of that kind of thing happening, which actually turned out to be we were way ahead of the curve. Yeah. We were doing that in 2018 and just 2 years later, you know, when the lockdowns happened, that was the only way to write.
Yeah, COVID songwriting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were all well-versed in that when we were sort of forced into that later, a few years later. But that's been the process. We actually just recorded our second studio record, which hasn't come out yet. But we did the same process for writing the material this time around. It feels like it works very well for us. Yeah, and in terms of that first gig and rehearsal, I think maybe a day or two before they sent me a few of their tunes that they had written. I sent them a song or two of mine. So we had a little bit of common ground, but we just got in the room together and kind of, you know, we played a few minutes of a song for each other or whatever and said, yeah, that'll work. And we'll just, you know, count it off and hope for the best, which is a lot. I've been doing this for 25 years as a professional musician, that there really is something to not overthinking getting up on stage with people and just trusting one another. So sometimes how the best stuff happens.
Totally. And your first album, the eponymous album released in 2020, is definitely a testament of that. I would love to hear a little bit more about this new album coming up, if y'all are at that point where you can talk about it. But first, I wanted to sit on this album that Andy and I both listened to preparing for this interview. I was super excited to hear Eddie Harris's Freedom Jazz Dance quoted in Ramblin'. That's the second track on the album.
Yes.
I would love to hear some of your jazz influences and some of the bands maybe coming together making this kind of music.
Good ear. Yeah. That was not planned, but we were all happy when we heard that. That just sort of, you know, it's like all these melodies and whatnot are floating around in all of our collective unconscious, for lack of a better term. And I feel like when you really turn things over and just trust your musicality, these things just they come to the surface in a very natural way, and every, you know, like, you know, and then people notice it, and it makes them smile, and it gives people something to talk about. It's great, you know, puts everybody on common ground. I went to a pretty prestigious jazz school for college, a place called William Patterson University, which is right outside of New York City in Patterson, New Jersey, and studied with some amazing jazz guitar players. I took a few lessons with Jim Hall. I took quite a few lessons with Peter Bernstein, Vic Juris, Gene Bertoncini, just to name a few.
That's quite a few.
They're big ones. Yeah, those are. I mean, I look back on that era and I kind of can't believe that stuff happened, especially with a guy like Jim Hall or you know, people that aren't around anymore. John Abercrombie, I took a few lessons with in that time, and I feel so incredibly fortunate to have been able to get it straight from the source, so to speak. Because what we do is, it's kind of like what you were saying at the top of your show. The term that I keep hearing about our approach is jazz adjacent. There's a whole crew of us. Last year, Joe, like you said, I play in Joe Russo's Almost Dead, which has become like a very happy accident, the success of that band. We're just as surprised as anybody. But last year, we headlined the Newport Jazz Festival with Branford Marsalis sitting in with us, you know. And for a guy like me, it was... I can't believe that happened. You know, that's like hitting the lottery. You
oh
know,
my gosh. I mean,
it
was,
well, Branford
couldn't imagine it happening.
Branford's dead adjacent himself. You know, so
exactly. When he got up there, I sort of, he was over on my side of the stage, and we were all a little nervous. I'm sure he wasn't, but we our band certainly was. You know, to be in the presence of a guy like this, and I sort of smirked at him, and I was like, you know this stuff? Have you ever heard this stuff before? You know, and he smiled back and he said, I'll be fine. Let's do it. But yeah, it's led to all sorts of things. And then through playing in Joe's band, I was invited to play with Phil Lesh. You know, I played in his band 30 or 40 times. And through that, you know, I met and got to play with, I mean, take your pick, you know, Stanley Jordan, John Scofield, John Mayer, a ton of really, really well-respected musicians and guys that I've just learned so much from. In fact, I just went to see Scofield two nights ago. He was in town at the Blue Note. I stuck around long. I was like the annoying guy that stuck around long enough to say hello at the end of the night. And you know, when he comes out of his dressing room, and he says, hey, Scott, you know, how's it going? And, you know, I just feel so lucky to be in the game, to be able to call these guys, you know, people that I actually have played with.
Well, you belong in the game, brother. Yeah. You're a fine guitarist.
Cheers. I appreciate it.
What do you think it is about the two scenes? Because we have a lot of crossover listeners, people that are in the jam scene, love that style of music, but then also love jazz. And having studied in that jazz realm, but then in this scene, this big jam scene that's like so happening right now, what do you think it is about the two art forms that just fit so well together?
Right. Well, I guess it's, if you're going to listen to this kind of stuff, if guys are really doing it, and girls are really doing it on stage, and you walk into a club, I think that there's a feeling of like, nobody knows what's going to happen next in both idioms that we're talking about, you know? And I think that that's a very specific feeling, and it doesn't appeal to everybody, but if it appeals to you, you recognize it when you hear it. And I think that that's what, you know, when you listen to Charlie Parker, there's that. When you listen to Coltrane, there's that. I think that when you listen to, you know, the Dead on a Good Night, there's that. You know, it's like a similar approach, even though the vocabulary might be different.
If you like it, you call it improvising, and if you don't, you call it noodling. So
Or nonsense. You know, some people don't get it at all, and I totally can appreciate that and understand it. And but I, you know, I love it. I can't get enough.
You know, playing as much as you did with Almost Dead, I heard John Mayer talk about how, you know, he needed to step away because he felt like he was becoming so Jerry Garcia informed. Does that happen with a group like that when you're playing with a band that's you know, honoring you know, a legendary figure and legendary music? When you go to play with Lamp, do you need a kind of a dust off period, or you know, I don't know how to put it. Does it inform, or do you just kind of brush it off when you're done not doing it?
No, I mean, I can't speak for the rest of the band, but I don't think that J-Rad is trying to imitate anything or that we're going up there trying to sound like anything else. I think that what that band is doing is playing a really great songbook, and what's becoming clear is going to be a really important songbook in the history of like American music. And I think that we're just playing it the way that we would play anything. You know, I don't think that we're feeling any pressure to sound like anybody else or anything like that. But there is a, you know, there's always sort of when switching between bands, whenever you switch between projects, there's always sort of a, I call it like the first one back, you know, where it's like you get back to another project that you've been away for a while, and it takes a second to remember what that project is, or to sort of access that part of your musical personality. Sometimes it's a whole gig, sometimes it's one song, you know, sometimes there's just an aha moment in the first 40 seconds where it's like, oh yeah, right, we do this, and then you're in it. But that can be fun because you can wave once you get away from something, you can come back to it and maybe you've changed a little bit, and then you bring some new information to the project you've been away from
Keeps things
for a
fresh.
while. Yeah, exactly. It sure does.
Especially with as tight of a band as the drum, guitar, organ. Andy, we were talking off mic about that specific setting.
Yeah, like your Wes Montgomery, Jimmy Smith thing. I mean, how many guitar organ bands are out there? It's a time-honored lineup, and you guys are in that pantheon, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I love it. I listen to, I'd say Boss Guitar, Wes Montgomery. Boss Guitar is that's a desert island record for me, for sure. One of the great Riverside records of all times.
If you are you at a point where you would love to talk about this new recording, or is it still kind of under wraps?
Oh yeah, no, I mean, we're not, you know, it's not some, you know, major label. We're not under contract. You know, I think it's great. I mean, we recorded it earlier this year at Ben Collette's studio in Vermont, and then our friend and one of my favorite mixing engineers ever, Chris Connors down here in Brooklyn, is just finishing up mixing it. It's great. I mean, you know, I really like it. A lot of the material we have not played live yet. Some of it we have. And I think it's all really strong. And we deferred to the same formula is a loaded word, but we prefer to keep things short on the record. There's not huge extended solos on anything. You know, you've probably heard it before, but I think a lot of jazz people share the same feeling that I sort of consider the recording to be an advertisement to come to the gig. You know, the gig is the thing. And we want to get really good, you know, happening versions of the tunes down on the record, but, you know, We'll give you the 9 or 10 minute version of the song live, but we're not going to put it on the record. So we stuck to that same approach on this recording, and I think we got some really good results.
That's totally an intersection between the jazz and the jam vibe, or these live albums. You really get it fleshed out. And I know you have a live album out there with Nectars where you can kind of see the first album fleshed out with these solos. Really, really cool album. Do you know when the studio, do you have a date yet on when you're looking to release it, or a time of year or whatever?
We haven't gotten that far, but it'll be early next year for sure.
Sweet. Well, you're coming
Yes.
to Denver and Colorado in general. Folks listening will have a chance to see LAMP as you have 4 stops before heading back to the East Coast. I see Aspen on the 11th, Avon on the 12th, Frisco on the 13th, and here in Denver on the 14th. Man, what is a night? Walk us through a LAMP set. What is like a night out with LAMP like?
It's pretty tame. So none of us are rookies, like we've
Right.
all been doing this for a long time, and so we keep it pretty chill.
Cool.
Usually there's a sound check, and then there's usually a nap involved for people, and then and then we go play our show, and then on to the next. Okay, I wouldn't change a thing. I like it
You must
that
love
way.
feeding off the audience, though, when you're playing. It's got to be the best.
Oh, of course. That's the whole thing, is
Yeah.
that's what keeps you coming back, that's what keeps us coming back, and I think it's what keeps the people coming back. And Colorado, you can't beat it. It's like it's like ground zero out there for live music. You guys are great.
You've played here before through Colorado?
Oh yeah. I've played through Colorado quite a few times. Yes, over the years, and it never disappoints.
So, Cervantes used to be a place where it was originally the Casino Cabaret, and it was one of those 10 cents a dance kind of places. And it's also had Duke Ellington and Count Basie and Billie Holiday and people like that play there. So it's got an immense history, and it's still continuing with groups like you coming in. Looking forward
Great.
to seeing you there.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we played the small room, maybe about a year ago, I would say. The Cervantes, I think they call it the
The
other
other side,
side.
yeah.
And we sold that out that time through, so we got the call to go up to the big boy room, and
It
looking forward to it. Hoping to have a good turnout.
sure to be a jam, and we're really excited. Those dates again are the 11th through the 14th, when you'll be at Cervantes. And we're excited to have you on Influenced. I have one last question. Since we build our shows, we play cuts from the album. Maybe we'll play a live song. But if you have, do you have like any like favorite jazz songs that maybe have shaped you personally as a musician that we could add to this? I know it's a big question. So it's like
Oh
whatever
man.
comes to mind, we'd love to play a little bit of your favorites alongside.
Oh, that's a great. I love that. The first thing that comes to mind is Mingus, Better Get It In Your Soul.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that was one that I've been listening to since I was,
Which
14 years
one,
old.
the early one, or the one with John Scofield and Philip Catherine? Have you heard that version?
I don't know if I've heard that one. I'm referring to the one that opens up Mingus, the first tune on that one. That's a good one. And then lately I've been super into Archie Shepp, The Magic of Juju. That one's probably too long to play on the radio.
Or a late night set.
It's one of my favorite albums of all time. That's really
That's
wow.
cool.
That's a special record, and one of the best album covers ever. Too. So the album artwork. Do yourself a favor if anybody listening hasn't seen that. That's a classic.